Hey there, Dynet listeners. Jake Barnett here to bring you the all-access WWE SmackDown audio for the show that aired February 12, 2015. Just a quick plug for the member side of our website before I get started. From a personal standpoint, I was a member for a few years before I became a contributor to the website, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, there was the .NET member forum, which has quite a few active members that post and talk about things. There's the ad-free version of the website that's much faster. And there's loads and loads of audio that that you can get your hands on that is not available to free side customers. So I would recommend you give it a shot, even if it's just for 1 month, to see if it's something that's up your alley. If you're a fan of podcasting and you listen to podcasts in the car, there's quite a bit of content that you can fit into your morning commute or waiting for class or whatever you do. So I'd recommend checking it out. So that's my plug. Getting into the show, this was an average episode of SmackDown. I mean, it was essentially the Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns show, and there was some good drama down the stretch that was enjoyable. I think the finish to the show was sort of flat. The finish of the main event, I should say. The post-match stuff was good, and I think Bryan and Reigns are developing somewhat of an interesting chemistry. It's taken longer to develop than I would have expected at first glance, but we'll go through that as we get into the tag team turmoil match that closed the show. The show started backstage, actually. We didn't get the traditional intro package right away. They went backstage to Kane and Big Show kind of holding court over a couple of different tag teams. Miz and Mizdow, the Usos, the Ascension, Slater Gator, and Los Matadores were all backstage being told by Kane that they would be involved in a tag team turmoil match. They were told that Bryan and Reigns would start the match, and then the other teams would be entered in at random to take on Reigns and Bryan, and that the team that survived would be the winners of the tag team turmoil. He brought up that it was pioneered by Pat Patterson, and kind of gave each team a pep talk, talking about how they could make history and make an impact and create opportunity for themselves with the victory tonight. Then after it was over, Big Show and Kane kind of looked at each other satisfied, having pumped up those teams, getting them ready. Even the baby faces were sort of excited about it, which was kind of strange. The Usos got fired up for an opportunity to get after Reigns and Bryan, which seemed kind of bizarre, but it worked out later on in the show. As they cut to the arena, Bray Wyatt made his entrance to start the show. In between those two things, we did get the original, or the regular SmackDown show introduction. And they went directly into Bray Wyatt's entrance. The announce team kind of focused on his cult aspects of his character and some of the more hocus-pocus stuff, and it's really obvious at this point that they're kind of preparing him for a run at The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and I hope they can make it interesting. I'm not one that has ever been particularly fond of the more ridiculous parts of The Undertaker's character. I think, when it first debuted and I was very young, I was kind of into it because it was, legitimately scary to me. I mean, I was probably an 8 or 9 year old kid when The Undertaker debuted, so at the time it terrified me, and I was always a fan, as I got into my teen years of the Undertaker act, and some of the more hocus pocus stuff with Kane. I mean, it was always, I guess, just kind of part of WWE for me. I never really thought too much about it, but now that I'm older and I see some of this stuff, it's just like, it's so transparently bad in terms of what the effects are, especially compared to what you see on well-produced television and movies, that it's just like, do you really want to go there necessarily? I mean, I don't get it a lot of the times. But it's pretty clear at this point that Wyatt and The Undertaker are going to have a clash. And I hope they make it more about psychology than, the magical elements of their characters or the supernatural elements, if you were. But they now seem kind of focused on that part of Wyatt's character, talking about how scary he is and how sick he is in the head as he made his entrance. And then R-Truth, he made his way down and did his normal shtick before the match kicked off. And then we got the first match of the night, which was Bray Wyatt defeating R-Truth at 5 minutes and 2 seconds, according to my timing. More back and forth than I would have imagined for what I thought going in was going to be a pretty quick squash. R-Truth got in quite a bit of offense during the first few minutes. They kind of traded back and forth. But Bray Wyatt took control down the stretch. Late in the match, hit a big clothesline on the outside and then taunted the crowd. He then did his crab walk and hit Sister Abigail in the ring for a victory. So not, you know, a technical showcase by any stretch of the imagination, but a passable match and a win for Bray Wyatt. I just really wish, you know, these wins felt like they were really getting him somewhere. I mean, you know, he's beating good wrestlers and you know, the Dolph Ziggler's of the world. And you know, it's like, well, these wins would mean more if he hadn't been sort of ignored and somewhat deflated throughout most of 2014. I mean, this is the first time Bray Wyatt has gotten, you know, somewhat taken seriously since the Wyatt family disappeared from television after they kind of became a gag team, you know, just doing ridiculous stuff. And they came back and split up, and this is really the first time we've gotten a chance to see Bray Wyatt portrayed as being strong on television. And I'm not sure it's sticking yet. I mean, I hope they get there, because it's clear that he's going to have a big part to play at WrestleMania, but I'm not convinced yet. We'll see where it goes. The show went to break, and then when we came back, Summer Rae was in the ring. As Paige made her entrance, the Bellas joined in on commentary. We got a quick match for the second match of the night with Paige versus Summer Rae. Essentially, you know, there was a couple of spots where Summer Rae got in some offense, but it was mostly a Paige-dominated match. She hit a series of clotheslines and a sidekick, and then applied the PTO and got the tap out. The announcers were mostly talking to the Bellas throughout the match, who weren't particularly interested in talking about the match necessarily. They were just kind of putting themselves over and total divas and talked about how they were the only real women in the division and things like that. You know, it was a strange contrast because we had gotten the NXT show the night before that had that fantastic Fatal 4-Way for the NXT Women's Championship, and then you watch SmackDown the following night and you're confronted with the stark reality of what the Divas division is on WWE mainline television, and it's just like, man, I mean, why can't these women get more of a chance to show off what they can do? Because we saw Paige and Summer Rae in NXT, and they were doing something a lot more interesting than this on both accounts. Summer Rae's just been lost in the shuffle. Paige is sort of getting more of a focus because she's a personality on Total Divas this season, and you know, they're kind of introducing her into this element. But what are you doing? You got two very talented women, 3-minute throwaway matches, barely, you know, any focus on what's actually happening in the ring by the announcers. It's sort of offensive how ridiculous it is how they treat the women on main WWE television. I know Triple H talked pretty extensively about it in his conference call earlier this week for the NXT show, and our own Jason Powell asked a pretty poignant question about the difference between, you know, the women on the main roster and the women that are in NXT, and Triple H talked about how you have to condition the audience to accept these women as athletes, and it's like, well, I think the audience is willing to accept whatever you put out in front of them. I think if you know, maybe there'd be a part of the audience that would hesitate to accept 10-minute women's matches, but for the most part, I think if you give them the right story, then they'll accept whatever match you give them in the context of that story. I don't think there's this huge pent-up aggression or you know, dismissal of the Divas. If anything, it's because of how they've been portrayed, not necessarily because people don't believe they could possibly be talented. So I hope, you know, when Triple H says stuff like that, it's because he, you know, he really gets it, and he's, you know, just trying to be as, you know, real politique as possible. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of politics involved in what makes it to Raw and SmackDown, and so he's kind of got to dance around that and balance that with what he's trying to do in NXT. And so, you know, it is what it is for him, but I hope his influence starts to pay off sooner than later, because these Divas are really being done a disservice by the way they're portrayed on Raw and SmackDown. After the match, we got a video recap that was shown of Rusev and John Cena's segment for Raw. We won't dwell on that. The announced team then went through the announced matches for Fastlane, and we got another commercial break. After the show came back, a Sheamus vignette aired. Adam Rose made his way to the ring while footage of him from last week was shown as he was dropped by his crew, the Rosebuds, as he did a trust fall. He climbed onto the ring and was going to do a trust fall again, but he thought better of it and just got into the ring for the third match of the night, which was Adam Rose versus Fandango for the 550th time. Man, 3-minute match, actually shorter than the women's match, believe it or not. And it was Adam Rose starting out on offense, you know, same kind of pattern they played last week. The match stalled in the middle for some rest holds, which was kind of bizarre because it really didn't even hit 3 minutes. Fandango suplexed his way out of the rest hold, fired up, hit a nice power slam, followed up for his last dance, leg drop from the top rope for the win, and that was it. I just see this stuff and I'm like, they really not realize that they've been having 4 matches like this in a row on television and nobody cares? I mean, it's the crowd is just doing crickets for this stuff. And these characters are going nowhere. They've been pseudo-feuding. I don't know if you want to call it a feud since they don't really go anywhere. But they've been having these same matches together on television for weeks now. And it's just like, is there a plan? Are you just throwing them out there to kill a few minutes? What's going on here? I wish there was more of a purpose for each segment, because it's, you know, they got 5 hours of television every week, and I know that's brutal to try to fill with real new content that's interesting, but it's like, at least try to assign a purpose to each segment that you're going to put on television. You know, just don't give us filler. And that's so much what this felt like. After another commercial break, a video package was shown for Triple H and Sting. Covered most of their feud going back to the Survivor Series when Sting interfered and cost the Authority their reign on top for 5 weeks or whatever it ended up being. Triple H and Sting's interaction from Monday was shown. Well, not really Sting, but Triple H's interaction with the fake Stings that freaked him out was shown from Monday, and I thought it was an effective segment on Raw. I think the video package was well put together, at least in the sense that it got across, you know, the fact that Triple H is talking a big game, but when it came down to being confronted by Sting, he kind of wilted in his presence when they did that segment on Monday. So the mind games are working, you know, despite Triple H, you know, his confidence, or at least his outward confidence. It seems like the angle they're going with for the feud between Triple H and Sting is not so much, you know, what Sting did at Survivor Series, although I'm sure that'll play a part in it. But Triple H is really focusing on, you know, Sting's long tenure after WCW was over with. That it took him 15 years to finally show up. And now that he picked his spots, he picked a spot where, you know, he doesn't actually want to confront him like a man. He's just a coward who wants to show up and raise hell in very opportune situations. So I don't know if, you know, if the final product is going to be a feud that's more focused just on, you know, Sting's recent appearances, or if they're actually going to try to bring some historical context to this in terms of Sting being sort of the guy that never abandoned WCW, and when the company went down, he stayed away for forever and, you know, waited until now to show up. And I think they're at least going to acknowledge that fact, you know, that he chose not to be there even after he probably could have. But I'm not sure if Sting's ever going to get a chance to verbally really respond to that. At least I hope he doesn't, because I think as soon as he starts, you know, talking about the, you know, that kind of pettiness, he loses so much in terms of the aura that surrounds his character. So, I mean, I hope they just have Triple H doing the trash talking here and Sting letting his actions speak for themselves, because I think that's where Sting is the strongest. You know, maybe you have him do one or two sentences worth of verbal interaction just to sort of make his point, you know, saying a lot by saying a little. But I really hope we don't get any long Sting promos, even all the way into WrestleMania. I think that would ruin the mystique of the match. And I hope WWE is smart enough to know that. It seems like, based on what they did on Monday, that they certainly are. Because that was a fun segment even without Sting being there. You know, it was just a cool way to you know, keep that character relevant without actually having him do an appearance, because they had all the fake stings up in the rafters, not in the rafters, but you know, on the balconies in the arena, and then the fake one that popped up in the ring that scared Triple H. So I thought it was a fun segment and a good video package that keeps that that feud alive. But Daniel Bryan made his ring entrance after that video package. We got another video package during his entrance that showed Roman Reigns shoving him down to the ground on Raw, and then we went to commercial. After they came back, Roman Reigns made his ring entrance, and we got a video shown of the spear on Daniel Bryan after the match on Monday. Miz and Mizdow made their entrance. They were the first draw for the Tag Team Turmoil match, and Miz and Bryan started the match. So at this point, we got the beginning of Tag Team Turmoil. This would carry us all the way until the end of the show. The early part of the Miz and Mizdow match was essentially Bryan and Reigns sort of tagging each other, and they began this process of sort of selling the one-upsmanship that would sort of characterize this whole Tag Team Turmoil match. Miz tagged in and ate a Superman punch late in the match, and then right as Reigns was setting up for the spear, Bryan tagged himself in and hit a running knee for the victory. So Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns defeated Miz and Mizdow at 4 minutes. Interesting chemistry throughout the match, especially when Mizdow was in the ring. You know, Daniel Bryan is supremely popular, and that was evident throughout this entire second hour of the show. But the crowd seemed really into Mizdow. Even when he was in the ring with Bryan, they were cheering his offense, and they were cheering the fact that Bryan was taking a beating. So interesting interaction there. I think Mizdow is over, and even hitting Daniel Bryan doesn't seem to get him any boos from the crowd, which I thought was interesting. So Miz and Mizdow lose at about the four-minute mark. Daniel Bryan hits the running knee on Miz and gets the pinfall. And then the Usos made their entrance, which brought us to commercial. And then we joined that match basically in progress after they got back to the... It was just about... The bell rang, and we got right into the match as the commercial break ended. And this one was sort of where the drama really started to unfold. This was a long match. It was essentially the top of the second hour, almost all the way to the bottom of the hour. So it was 27 minutes or so, and it was a great tag team exhibition. I thought they did a great job. There were a couple of commercial breaks throughout, which really shortened how much television time the match got. I think, you know, it was a 26-minute match, but we probably got to see, you know, 17 minutes of it, maybe just a hair over 15 minutes. Reigns and Bryan got to the advantage early, but the Usos were, you know, they're a much better team in terms of using their team tactics, and you know, they communicate better with one another. And so Bryan would get off to a hot start, and then the Usos would sort of outsmart him and isolate him in the corner, and then he would escape and tag in Reigns, who sort of made fun of Bryan for, you know, having a tag team you know, outsmart him, and then he got into the match, and they did the same thing to him, and then Bryan would talk trash, and then Bryan tagged back in and got back into the action, and then the same kind of thing happened. He got on offense for a bit, but the Usos would use their superior tag team skills to cut Bryan off, and then, you know, they hit some big offense on him, a double team splash. And a kick, and then Bryan was forced to roll to the outside to recover, at which point Reigns started talking more trash to him about taking a break and whatnot, and they went to commercial at that point. As we got back, Bryan was back on offense, hit a butterfly suplex on Jimmy Uso. You know, they kind of did... It wasn't really a typical WWE tag team situation where the baby faces were really doing a lot of selling down the stretch. It was really more back and forth throughout the whole thing. Interesting close to the match, though, which I'll get to in a second. But the second commercial kind of was the most interesting part of the drama, where Bryan, after doing a couple of minutes worth of selling, knocked both of the Usos out to the floor, and then, you know, just started raining kicks on them as they were against the barricade. And Roman Reigns ran over and pulled Bryan off of Jey Uso as he was just continuing to rain down knees and kicks. And then Bryan got in his face and told him that he wanted to stay aggressive because they needed to win. And Reigns said that he can't win out there on the floor. He needs to be back in the ring and do it the right way. And that they kind of cut to commercial as they continued that argument. Bryan was still on offense after they came back from the second commercial, but and then he refused to make a tag when he had the opportunity, and so the Usos eventually outsmarted him one more time and made quick tags to stay fresh and isolated him in the corner. Reigns got in late in the match at the point where they would probably normally do a hot tag if they were facing heels who had been, you know, shining out the baby faces for most of the match. Reigns had to kind of explain to his cousins after they broke up, you know, a pinfall, that it was what it was, you know, that he couldn't, you know, just let them win because he was their family. At that point, Jimmy slapped the taste out of his mouth after he got upset, and Reigns sort of got fired up at that point. Hit a big running kick to Jay, you know, his apron kick that he does as one of his signature moves. Roman hit a Superman punch on Jay, and then got hit by a super kick from Jimmy as he turned around. Bryan came off the top, but ate a super kick of his own on the way down. Jimmy was going to try for a splash on Bryan, who was the legal man, but Bryan got his knees up and then transitioned into the yes lock and got the win. So, interesting finish. You know, Reigns was the argument going into the second commercial break between Bryan and Reigns was that, you know, Reigns was sort of defending his family by saying that Bryan shouldn't be so aggressive. He should just try to win the match the right way in the ring. He shouldn't go out of his way to hurt them. And then towards the end of the match, Reigns was sort of forced to acknowledge that Bryan was right and that they should have stayed aggressive because when, you know, Reigns did the right thing by breaking up a tag, you know, Jimmy Uso got in his face and slapped him. So, you know, it was kind of an interesting bit of psychology there where they're sort of building this team chemistry between Reigns and Bryan, where they're sort of forced to mutually respect one another throughout the course of the gauntlet matches here. But a nice finish. Bryan transitioned into the yes lock, got the tap out win. Bryan and Reigns sort of argued after the match because Reigns thought that Bryan had held onto the yes lock a bit too long. Bryan got up and told him that he had to make Jimmy pay for the super kicks that he hit Reigns and Bryan with throughout the match, and holding on to the submission was a way to extract a bit of revenge. After another commercial break, the Los Matadores made their entrance with El Torito. This was a short match, 2 minutes and 29 seconds. Bryan started out the match with Fernando, and that's basically the way it ended. We never got a tag in this match. It was Bryan essentially looking strong against Fernando. He hit him with a big butterfly suplex off the top rope and then applied the yes lock on the ground after the suplex and got the tap. Slater Gator then made their entrance, and this was an even shorter match, a minute 14. Essentially, Reigns tagged himself in at the start of the match. He put a beating on Slater to start. He hit a Superman punch on Titus when Titus tried to get into the ring you know, to interrupt a move, and then hit a spear on Slater for the win. So Reigns got to look dominant against Slater Gator, put them both down at a minute and 14. The Ascension made their entrance, and I'm not even sure that you can call this a match. It was 2 minutes and 49 seconds. The Ascension essentially brought the match to the outside. Bryan got low-bridged when he hit the ropes by Connor, and then both Connor and Victor took Bryan out by the announce tables, threw him into the timekeeper's area. Reigns got involved at that point, and he got thrown over the announce table, and so you got both Bryan and Reigns laid out on the floor. Then the Ascension turned their attention back to Bryan and threw him into the ring post, and then threw Reigns into the ring post, tossed Bryan into the ring, and hit the Fall of Man on him, and then took a few extra shots at Roman Reigns. The bell never rang at any point here. You know, there was no DQ announced, but eventually a swarm of referees just ended up coming down to the ring and separating the Ascension from Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Eventually, after the refs had kicked the Ascension out of the ring, the announcers had to chime in and clarify that the Ascension had actually been disqualified. I don't know why they never rang the bell, or you know, maybe they were trying to sell the idea that Daniel Bryan had knocked over the timekeeper's table and so the bell wasn't working. I don't know, but yeah, there was no effort to ring a bell to signal for the disqualification, and it was never announced by the ring announcer, Eden Styles. It was just kind of communicated over the headsets from the announce team. So that was a bizarre finish, but Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns defeated the Ascension at 249 by DQ, and then we got the entrances for the final match of Tag Team Turmoil, which was Big Show and Kane making their entrance. And I thought it was a good use of the Ascension. I mean, Slater Gator and Los Matadores are throwaway tag teams, so using them to make Bryan and Reigns look strong individually isn't necessarily a bad use of them. I mean, having Bryan and Reigns steamroll the majority of the tag division in 1 hour on an episode of SmackDown probably isn't the best use of all these guys, but I thought if anybody got used well tonight, it was the Usos, who had a fantastic match with Bryan and Reigns and Ziggler, and the Ascension, who got to deliver a beating, didn't take a loss, and they served the purpose of making Bryan and Reigns look exhausted and really weak heading into the last match of the night, which was Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns versus Kane and Big Show. And this one, I think it was right at the beginning of the last quarter hour of the show. So there was 15 minutes left in the show, and then we got a commercial, and then that was the beginning of the match right after the commercial break. So there was about 12 minutes maybe of televised action for Bryan Reigns and Kane and Big Show. The match actually ended at 10:38, so we got a little bit post-match before the show had to go off the air. But the story of this match was really Kane and Big Show having communication problems, and it came out of nowhere, which made it really bizarre. They had kind of told the story earlier on in the Tag Team Turmoil match that Bryan and Reigns were not on the same page, and then as the night went on longer, it seemed like they were able to sort of gel and put aside their differences and learn to live with one another in order to get through the Tag Team Turmoil match. And then you had the Ascension put a beating on both of them, and they're, just both wrecked and exhausted heading into the final match. And it looked like, well, Kane and Big Show just got to come out there and mop up. And then it's like turnabout is fair play with these guys, because Kane and Reigns started the match. Bryan and Reigns both sold their various injuries and exhaustion, so Reigns is sort of limping to start the match, and Bryan is just trying to catch his breath on the apron. Reigns didn't spend too much time in the match. He sort of tagged Bryan in within the first minute or so, and then Bryan hit kicks on Kane and then started selling again. And then Show tagged in, and they isolated Bryan for a good portion of the match. They both ground down Bryan, they started bickering at one another, which was really bizarre. I don't know where it came from, because they didn't sell that at the beginning of the show at all. You'd think if they were going to sort of introduce this conflict, that they would have done it when they were trying to pump up the other tag teams, and it would have been something that they might have been able to play on throughout the whole night, kind of introducing, well, are Kane and Big Show are they going to be able to keep it together and win Tag Team Turmoil? But it was never really even teased, so that was kind of strange. The bickering really started when Big Show and, Kane was in the ring and with Bryan, and Kane shoved Bryan, who collided with Big Show on the apron, and Show thought it was intentional, but Kane said that Bryan had just altered direction and hit him. Show talked trash to Reigns after tagging in and then set up for a chokeslam on Bryan, but Sho waited too long to execute the move, and Bryan was able to sort of kick himself free and hit a DDT. Bryan kind of crawled slowly over to his corner, but Sho made a last-ditch effort to stop him and was able to prevent him from making the tag. Sho and Kane continued to bicker because Kane was upset at Sho for wasting time and not finishing Bryan. Sho climbed to the second rope, and Kane tagged himself into the match. Kane and Sho continued to bicker at that point because Kane was yelling at Sho about not taking unnecessary risks by climbing to the second rope and that they had to win the match to show the authority what they could do. Kane got into the match and immediately got put into the S-lock because the bickering had allowed Bryan some time to recover. And Kane lost focus, and Bryan pulled him down to the mat and locked it in. Sho had to break up the hold to save the match for his team. Kane got to his feet and tagged back in the Sho. Sho immediately ran in and knocked Reigns off the apron to prevent Bryan from making the tag. He called for the choke slam again. The crowd booed. I don't know if they were booing the choke slam or just Big Sho in general. Bryan trapped Sho's arm when he went to lift him up and applied the yes lock on the Sho. Kane was forced to break up, and then they really started bickering. Kane put his hands on Sho at that point, and Sho pushed him away and hit a knockout punch. And so Kane is down at that point. The ref checked on Kane, and Reigns snuck in and hit a spear on Big Sho. Bryan followed up with a flying knee and then covered Sho to get the win. So at 10 minutes and 38 seconds, Bryan pins Sho, gets the win for his team. Bryan and Reigns survived tag team turmoil largely because Sho and Kane were not on the same page, because Bryan and Reigns were really selling the injuries, and the announced team made it very clear that that Kane and Big Sho should have been able to just mop this one up, and it should not have been that big of a deal. But because they could not get along, they cost themselves the match and tag team turmoil. But the story after the bell was both Kane and Sho leaving the ring area, Bryan and Reigns sort of leaning on the ropes, looking up at the WrestleMania sign, kind of contemplating their match at Fastlane. Reigns picks Bryan up, and then they kind of share a look at one another and a nod of respect, and the Sho goes off the air. So kind of a good second hour, I would say, just because of the drama that Bryan and Reigns were able to put together. I mean, just as a team and, sort of getting to know one another through their conflict, they were able to put aside their differences eventually and get through the gauntlet match and overcome, the beatdown given to them by the Ascension after they had already competed in four matches. And then, taking on Big Sho and Kane. So they overcame the odds together, and I guess that has a way of bonding people together. Who knows which way they'll go on Monday, but at this point it seems like they're sort of telling the story that Bryan and Reigns are sort of developing a level of respect for one another despite being adversaries and despite having this huge opportunity on the line for them at WrestleMania. So an interesting way to approach, developing this match for Fastlane. I think we're going to see, the way that this plays out on Monday is that the authority is going to continue to drive a wedge between them, and we'll see who blinks, and we'll see what happens at Fastlane as well. So an interesting Sho. I would say the first half of the Sho is completely missable, but if you can put up with the final hour, you get a lot of great wrestling, especially Daniel Bryan and Reigns versus the Usos, which I think was a very fun television match. And the Kane and Big Sho conflict kind of stuck out in a bad way, kind of came out of nowhere, really, and in a lot of ways was oversold. There was really no reason for the conflict in storyline sense. It almost looked like Big Sho turned again, which was even weirder. Like, he just turned heel. Like, why is he now, turning on his teammates in the authority? Like, can we just let Big Sho be an angry giant for a while? Like, can we just get over the fact that this guy can't make up his mind about what he's doing, you know, can't get along with anybody, whether it's babyface or heels. It's a strange situation for Show. He's a very overexposed and confused character, and I guess you could say the same for Kane. But all in all, watch the last half of the show, especially watch the Usos and Bryan and Reigns match. You can probably fast forward through most of the rest if you really wanted to, but that one's really a lot of fun. And pay attention to the drama. Turn up the volume when Bryan and Reigns are arguing, because there really was some conversation happening there that I think is going to be a nice little bit of filler detail for their story. And that will do it for me. So I'll be back next week with another SmackDown audio. I appreciate everybody taking the time out to listen, and I hope you have a great weekend.